This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Today we're talking to two people whose reactions to the president's re-election reflect the divisions in the country. Earlier, we heard from David Frum, a former speechwriter for President Bush. He is greatly relieved by the Bush victory. My next guest, Hendrik Hertzberg, is troubled by it. Hertzberg is a staff writer and senior editor at the New Yorker magazine. The magazine doesn't usually endorse candidates, but the editors felt so strongly about this election, they endorsed John Kerry. A book collecting Hertzberg's writings was published this year titled Politics, Observations and Arguments, 1966 to 2004. I spoke with Hertzberg this morning before John Kerry conceded, but Hertzberg was assuming that Bush would be staying in the White House. How did you feel this morning, waking up, assuming you went to sleep last night?
Yeah, I did go to sleep, and I didn't feel great. I felt a mixture of all kinds of emotions, but along the lines of sadness and grief, really, and worry for the country.
What are your biggest concerns about four more years of a Bush presidency?
Well, my biggest concerns have to do with foreign policy. That's where the existential issues really are. I have concerns across the board. But in foreign policy particularly, one of the first thoughts I had this morning was that now all that anti-Bush sentiment around the world, in Europe and in the rest of the world, there's a great danger now of it transmuting into real anti-Americanism. And I think we're in trouble both because of the attitude of the rest of the world toward us, and when you're the most powerful, you're always on thin ice in that department, and also because the kind of judgment that the administration has shown in the last 4 years is not reassuring when it comes to the judgments it'll make in the future. And the grown-ups in that administration are likely to be departing, beginning with Colin Powell, or to be powerless.
This time around, President Bush has won the popular vote. What do you think the vote says about America, how it's changed, how it's not changed, how divisive it is? Is it more divisive or less divided than it was 4 years ago?
Yes, he has won the popular vote, the first apparent absolute majority won by a presidential candidate since his father. It shows, it certainly shows that we are becoming two countries in a way that's extraordinary. It would have shown that had Kerry won too, by the way. The way the vote seems to have broken down is so strongly along cultural lines, What you're hearing this morning from most of the commentators is that moral issues, a euphemism for gay marriage, for abortion, for guns, for that set of concerns, suddenly surged to the front and became the decisive issue in the election. It certainly is extraordinary that at a time of not particularly good economic, not a particularly good economic picture, a war that is disapproved of by a good half of the public, maybe even more, a lot of uncertainty about terrorism, that a candidate like Bush could be elected. There's got to be some explanation, and the one that people are groping for today seems to be this cultural explanation. I think we might be entering a period not too unlike the 1920s, minus the prosperity, where what the right calls the cultural elite will feel alienated from national life, is in a way that's not too different from. Or at least echoes the 20s and the 50s. And I also think and worry that this could be a prelude to a destructive kind of counterculture, to political extremism, which has been limited for the most part, really, to the right recent years. The real ugly kind of extremism that was on the left in the 70s especially has been absent, and I fear a resurgence of that.
You mean as a response?
Yes, as a response. Remember, we are going to have one-party domination now of the government in a more decisive way than we have had it since FDR and the New Deal, since FDR's second term, really. Despite the fact that the country is so extremely narrowly divided, it's not an overwhelming majority on the red side. The red side will have all the formal levers of power, and powerlessness is an incubator of irresponsibility. And so I worry about a breakdown on the left of center side of the spectrum.
You use the expression "cultural elite." Do you feel that when people on the right critically use the word, the expression "cultural elite," or "liberal elite," that you are included in that? And if so, what does that mean to you?
Yes, I certainly do think so, and it means I live in a big cosmopolitan city. I have lots of gay friends. I don't see why they shouldn't get married if they want to. I like art and music. I like country music, but I like lots of other kinds of music too. I guess I believe in progressive taxation, and I would like to see a European style welfare state in the United States. I guess that makes me pretty much dyed in the blue a liberal elite, liberal/cultural elite. I guess they're two different things, but they overlap heavily. And the New Yorkers, I won the New Yorker, which is by definition an elite publication.
Are you feeling today alienated from your own country?
No, but I am feeling alienated from half of my fellow countrymen. And it's distressing. I certainly don't feel alienated from my country. This is my country just as much as it would be if Kerry had won in a landslide. But this split, which as I mentioned earlier, would exist no matter which of the two candidates had won the election, is increasingly distressing. And I do feel an alienation from half the country, from half of the people in the country. I don't really understand where they're coming from. It's probably a failure of imagination on my part, I suppose, that I don't really understand how it can be that a majority of Americans can vote for George W. Bush after the last 4 years. And I think on their side, there's a similar, maybe greater failure of imagination, which is symbolized in the reification of people like me as a liberal elite, a cultural elite that is contemptible and dehumanized. God knows I'm as good an American as any Bible-thumping, draft-dodging radio talk show host or evangelist you can name. You know, I serve my country in the military. I am a solid bourgeois citizen with a wife and a child. I work hard in my job. I'm as good an American as any of these people. I'm not alienated from my country, but my country is divided bitterly, in a way that, of course, is not as serious as in the 1860s, but is at least as serious as it's ever been in my lifetime. I can only compare it to the Vietnam period, but there was something warmer and about that period than there is now. The division now is kind of is cold.
there seems to be a lot of agreement that the evangelical vote was very strong yesterday, and that's apparently what President Bush's chief political advisor, Karl Rove, wanted. He wanted to get the evangelicals who didn't turn up 4 years ago, those 4 million evangelical voters that apparently he's been talking about, to turn up yesterday, and apparently he did well in that category. What does that suggest to you about what the president's agenda might be like in the next 4 years?
Well, I think that his agenda and the agenda of most of the people around him is not really the agenda of the religious right in any really sincere way. I think that analysis is as good as any. That he's captured formerly non-voting evangelicals, and that the size of the evangelical community and vote has also presumably increased in the last 4 years and over the last decade or so. I'm sure that they will try to dole out as much red meat to that part of their base as they can, and that'll show up in judicial appointments, certainly. And those judicial fights are going to be horrific, and they will serve to rile up the cultural conservative base further, because I think that there will probably be appointments that will be firm right-wing quasi-evangelical appointments to the Supreme Court. That Rehnquist is as far left as it's going to go. Bush is likely to keep his promise to appoint justices in the tradition of Scalia. And an appointment like that is likely to be blocked by a Senate filibuster by the Democrats, this remnant of the Democrats in the Senate. And that's going to keep the bitterness at a high level. And I think it is in the interest of the Rove strategy to keep it at that high level, to keep the evangelicals angry and riled up and beleaguered on a more or less permanent basis.
In the editorial that you co-wrote in the New Yorker that endorsed John Kerry, you wrote about there being a new sense of the meaning of separation of church and state within the Bush administration. And I'd like you to elaborate on that and to discuss what, if any, your concerns might be in the next 4 years.
I should say that editorial, that endorsement, which was unprecedented in the New Yorker's history, was really very much a group effort. It cannot be said to have an author. David Remnick and a half dozen of his staff writers all got together to write that endorsement. Well, they do. The Bush administration and its evangelical component do seem to have a different idea about the borderline between religious life, organized religious life, and organized political life. I don't know how far this will go. I think for me, the most worrisome aspect of it is not really things like prayer in school or that sort of issue, or even gay marriage, but rather the idea that you can make decisions of state on the basis of divine inspiration, or of trusting your gut, trusting your heart, when you have defined that as being a conduit to the Almighty. That is alarming, and I think that Bush will now be, having been elected in his own right by this impressive popular majority, outright popular majority, is going to have more confidence in himself. He'll be less inclined to listen to his father's friends. He's triumphed pretty definitively over his father now, and he's going to have a lot more self-confidence. People like Colin Powell are not going to have as much sway over him, and we are going to be led increasingly by the Bush gut. And the bush gut is connected to the bush brain, which believes that it has got a pipeline to Almighty God. At least that's the way it certainly looks.
What do you think will be on the agenda in the next 4 years with a Republican president and a Republican House and Senate?
Well, Bush has... The agenda that Bush put forward in the campaign was one of continued tax cuts along the same lines that he's been proposing and achieving for the last 4 years. That is skewing the tax system more toward taxing work rather than wealth, and lightening the tax burden on the wealthy, and then therefore making it heavier on the non-wealthy. And he has proposed privatizing part of Social Security. I don't think that that latter part of his agenda is going to be fulfilled. He is going to be a lame duck. And Congress is vulnerable to gridlock, particularly in the Senate. And when it comes to the really hardball issues like Social Security, I don't think that the Democrats in the Senate are going to roll over and play dead. I think they'll be willing to use the filibuster to tie the Senate up in knots and keep the more extreme elements of this agenda from being fulfilled. But he's certainly going to be able to appoint conservatives to the Supreme Court. They may be radical conservatives, or they may be simply activist conservatives, but they're not going to be judicial restraint conservatives. They're going to be activists of one sort or another, and they're going to be on the right. I think that's where he'll have the biggest success, and the most lasting legacy will probably be in the judicial appointments, especially to the Supreme Court, more than in the way he'll be able to restructure the tax or Social Security systems. There'll also be continued neglect of the environment. That could have extremely serious consequences globally. And there'll be continued battles over these sterile cultural issues like abortion and gay marriage.
You've made it clear that today is a sad day for you. Is there anything in history or literature that you've been thinking about today?
No, there isn't yet, but one of my tasks for the day is going to be to find something along those lines that I can draw some comfort from. I'm feeling a very cold kind of grief right now, and I'm going to look for that kind of comfort where I can find it. So far, I haven't been able to access that particular part of my heart.
Hendrik Hertzberg, thank you so much.
Thank you, Terry.
Hendrik Hertzberg is a staff writer and senior editor at The New Yorker magazine. A book collecting his writing was published this year. It's called Politics, Observations and Arguments, 1966 to 2004.